Welcome to Impact OC, the only program showcasing the people and organizations shaping Orange County, with your host, Don Camber.
Hello, live from the OC Talk Radio studios at UCI's Beal Applied Innovation Center. I'm OC Talk Radio Public Affairs Director Don Camber with another great guest impacting our community in a positive way. Environmentalist artist Weiland is known for painting murals in 17 countries and 79 cities around the globe. The primary motivating factor for Weiland is to expose as many people to not only art, but to the conservation of our oceans. That's where the Weiland Foundation comes in. It brings people together for clean water and a healthy ocean. Today, I welcome Weiland Foundation President Steve Creech. Thank you, Steve, for being on Impact OC.
Thanks, Don. It's great to be here.
Steve, please go over several of the programs your organization offers.
Well, I think the best place to start when we talk about the Weiland Foundation is to really talk about Weiland, the artist himself. And as most people may or may not know, in Orange County, Weiland's a bit of an iconic figure here because he started in the early 1980s and probably one of the first people in the world that was doing the type of art that he did, which was creating these gigantic marine life murals. And he got started right here in Orange County in Laguna Beach in 1981. But the concept behind what Weiland was doing was kind of groundbreaking in a way, although we may take it for granted now. Now that the world is covered with 3M super graphics, and you have to go back a few years to think of the fact that most of these large-scale paintings were billboards. They were hand-painted. So Weiland took that concept, and he introduced people to the sight of seeing life-size marine life mammals, the great whales, in person, in urban settings, for people to truly understand what the scope and scale is about them. And that's the original vision that Weiland set for the Weiland Foundation. And we've really taken that to another level over the past few years, in that our goal is to inspire people first, to engage them about the importance and the beauty of our natural world and our marine resources, to get them informed and educated. And we feel that with those two qualities, we feel like that creates the kind of person who can be a more positive, solution-oriented steward for our environment. That's the kind of person that can take action. If you're informed without being inspired, or if you're inspired without being informed, it's hard to achieve that next level, which is what we're going for, to inspire people to take action. So that's what the foundation's premise is.
So what are some of the programs your foundation offers to inspire people to appreciate the ocean and respect the ocean?
Well, one of the programs that we have, and we have several, but the foundation itself is more of, it's less brick and mortars and more about mobility. And one that most people in Orange County I know are familiar with is the Weiland Clean Water Mobile Learning Experience. And that's it's a tractor-trailer combo that we put together a few years ago. It's a 1,000-square-foot, double-expandable science center on wheels. And it's all dedicated to how we use water as a shared resource in our communities, biodiversity, urban runoff and pollution, and even looking at, you know, the cultural aspects of how our communities and cities are built around water systems and ultimately compromised by that one. You know, the one thing that gave us life suddenly becomes the thing that we compromise. So our mission is to take this message upstream and introduce people into the concept of the cause and effect of what we are doing and how that affects our oceans downstream. And we think that's an area that people are not really familiar with at right now. So we do things like we travel to Title I schools. We've taken our Clean Water Center down to Mexico. We've done tours of Tecate, Mexicali, Ensenada, Tijuana, working in partnership with the Mexican EPA, CETIS University, and teaching young kids about what they can do to protect the water in their communities. And we do that here in the U.S. We've gone to El Centro, South Central Los Angeles, mining communities in West Virginia. Here's one thing that Weiland and I both very much agree on. you know, in the 80s, there was a big movement to save the whales, and it was necessary because we were in danger of losing those. In 1989, they thought the blue whale was going to go extinct. The numbers were declining. And over time, as I've come to work with Weiland, and I was pretty much involved with him in the second half of his career. I came in about halfway through his mural of initiatives. But we both agree that we're not going to save any whales if we don't get people to understand what their waste stream is doing to our waterways and our coasts. So if we can raise awareness about impacts related to habitat destruction, urban runoff, eutrophication, all of these things that ultimately affect the health of our coasts and our oceans, plastics, marine debris, that's how we're going to save our marine ecosystems.
Now, these mobile units, what can people learn from them? What does it offer?
Well, the kids come in. We've had over 1 million kids go through this exhibit since we created it. And it's all aligned with national standards for education, for science. But kids come in, and we have an onboard 40-person theater where the kids come in as a drop of water, and they go through the water cycle and understand about the impacts on our water systems as they travel to the ocean. They can also learn about urban runoff. One of the exhibits is they can actually make it rain inside the vehicle. So we have an urban landscape model. The kids introduce different sorts of pollutants. It could be anything from cigarettes to detergents to fertilizer runoff from local farms. They hit the rain button, the rain falls, and all of the pollutants, which are represented as tiny beads, they ultimately flow and coalesce together, and they end up in this kind of, I don't want to say toxic soup in the ocean, but I think we can see analogies off our own coast after rains when we have those really high bacterial loads, and you can't swim in it. You know, you have dangers of viral infections, bacterial infections. I mean, it's nasty business. So I'll give you some quick background on myself. You know, I grew up here in Los Angeles like you, Don, and I would imagine that we had similar experiences. I grew up as a kid reading Scholastic magazines, and I remember, you know, I was a kid of the 70s. I remember seeing the point pollution articles and pictures, and you can see the toxic sludge that's coming out of factories and paper mills around the country. And I think those kinds of things really struck a nerve with me. And I think a lot of people in my Generation X generation, and those images really stuck. And we wanted to do something about it. I became a journalist. I worked for the Orange County Register. I probably worked for every newspaper in Southern California, just trying to make a living. Working 12 hours a day, two newspapers, I worked at the Star News in Pasadena. I'd worked at community papers here. I was a beat reporter, but I jumped at any kind of environmental story I could do. I was a terrible student at Cal State Fullerton. You know, I got a D in biology, but when I started learning more about the environment, all bets were off. Then it became so relevant to me that I just couldn't stop learning about it, and I suddenly became a much better student. But I eventually found my way to Weiland, and I think I was writing an article about him for a magazine, and I really liked what he had to say because he was connecting with people on multiple levels. And it didn't seem to be a political thing with him, the right, the left, everybody loved him. And I thought, wow, this is somebody that I could hitch my wagon to and probably do some real good in the world. And it just so happened my father was an artist and my mom was a social worker. You know, we all have our own backstories, right? But I came in working for him and, I was his publicist. But my gravitation was towards the foundation, which was, we would paint murals, but I thought we could do a lot more with it. And so, he and I were just very aligned in creatively and the things that we wanted to achieve in the world. And so we ended up taking on bigger and bigger projects. One of my biggest projects was his final mural, which was we were going to paint a 10-mile stretch of the Great Wall of China, and with no budget, and for the Olympics. So, like, you just stack the complexity on top of one after the other on that one. But what was interesting is when you try to do great things, you may not get the actual effect that you initially intended, but the results may be something greater. And that's what happened with that particular project. We ended up building a mile-long stretch of structure in Chaoyang Park for the Olympics in 2008. And we got students from all around the world, local embassies, and we create this amazing mile-long painting for the Olympics that we eventually brought to the U.S. National Mall and installed between the Washington Monument and the Capitol.
Describe it.
It was a series of, they were 50 feet, there were a series of canvases that were 50 feet long by about 12 feet high, and they represented all the different nations of the world, the different water habitats, coasts, great rivers of the world, lakes. And I think it was part of the opening of the new Smithsonian Ocean Hall. And those are the kinds of things that we would really draw attention to the issues of our day. But going back to that Scholastic article, or those articles that we used to see, it was a very direct line to environmental pollution and problems, you know, in the 70s and 80s. You could see it. Now things are very different. We have, you know, swelling populations, urban populations, industrialization, you know. So the problems that we're seeing in the world are much more diffused. It's harder to pinpoint the source of them. So, and that's where we get into non-source pollution. And that's where we get into urban runoff and dead zones and, you know, oxygen-depleted dead zones where nothing can live. Fisheries die out. So the Wildland Foundation is really about getting people back into the fold and engaged about these issues that are much more difficult to see, and look at what we're doing individually with what we're consuming at home, what our waste output is, and if we can find some way to right-size our consumption. We're not saying, you know, we're not ascetics. We're not telling people to, you know, stop everything, because that's impossible. I've got two kids myself, and it's very, very challenging to try to, you know, reduce your waste stream. But if you're conscious about it and you understand what the impacts are or the byproducts of, you know, the way we live our lives, you can actually do something about it. So these programs that we do are really designed to, you know, connect with people like we do with our Clean Water Mobile Learning Center. We have another program called the National Mayor's Challenge for Water Conservation that it was just really created on a lark. In South Florida, we had a little water calculator, water footprint calculator, a few years ago that we put together. And some mayors came to us at a green festival and they said, you guys do a good job of getting people interested in what is essentially the non-interesting water. I defy most people to come up with a subject that's probably less interesting than water. But there's no subject other than clean air that's more vital to our survival as a species. So, you know, as much as, you know, people have said, well, why don't you just paint pretty pictures? You know, we believe that what we're doing is essential because very few other people can actually galvanize communities about the importance of clean water and, you know, ultimately the health of our marine ecosystems. So programs like, you know, the National Mayor's Challenge for Water Conservation, you know, we started that with about 5 mayors in South Florida, and now we've had 1,000 mayors across the U.S. participate in it. Collectively, I think we've encouraged people to reduce their water waste by something like 17 billion gallons. But also they understand that by reducing that waste, it makes their communities more drought resilient. It improves the health of local marine ecosystems. And, you know, then we're talking about a sustainable, viable, you know, culture that we can live in. You know, and let's be honest, in the United States, you know, we consume more than our fair share of products here. So, you know, we are one of the big contributors. You know, fortunately, we do have strong environmental laws, and you know, we do a fairly good job of policing those. But at the end of the day, people have to make better decisions about the products that they buy, ask for more from their manufacturers and retailers, demand more, and, you know, play a part in the whole system. I really can go on and on about all of this, but the foundation is really this beautiful synthesis of this incredible individual who created one of the largest arts and public places projects in the entire world, dedicated to the health of our marine ecosystems. And now we're trying to help people find the way to go from protecting those great marine mammal species to looking how we're playing a role in the future survival.
Is he seeing results?
You know, we are seeing results. One of the other things that we believe in is really evaluating and assessing our work. So, you know, we just did a survey of cities across the U.S. and we compared per capita water use and waste from cities that take part in our programs versus similar sized, similar demographic communities that don't. And we found that there is a significant improvement in water management. We can't correlate it directly to us. You know, there's a lot of factors that go into that. But it's these types of efforts that you know, really light a fire under people. We are just trying to give these communities and mayors a reason to, you know, get on their soapbox and talk about these things. We'll sweeten the pot. You know, we give away a Toyota Highlander to a charity in those communities that pledge the most. We get prizes and things like that. But our surveys tell us that people are more interested in doing the right thing than they are in prizes.
So when people see Weiland's art, what does Weiland want them to think, as opposed to just looking at the art?
Oh, he wants them to develop an appreciation for the ocean, for marine mammals, for... That's his love, and that's what... It's probably no secret, but your listeners may not know this, that, you know, Weiland's parents were auto workers. His mother was a single mom, a forklift driver at the Chrysler stamping plant in Dearborn. And, you know, the father walked out on him and his four brothers when, you know, he was a kid. Didn't come back for 7 years. So, and Weiland had a disability at the time, and had to go through, you know, corrective surgery on his leg for every summer for 8 years, I guess. So his leg was always in a cast during the summers. And, you know, I all those things together somehow formed this amazing artist who was just committed to changing the world through this inspiring vision of great marine life. You know, yeah.
Where can people see his art?
Well, you can see it in Laguna Beach on the side of our gallery at 509 South Coast Highway. You can go down to, if you're ever down Long Beach, you can see the Long Beach Sports Arena, which he painted in the early 1990s, and it's over 6 acres in size. We even painted the roof on that one. And I say we because I usually am the one that had to put together the paints and permits and convince other people to do it. And then, of course... Those stories are just amazing, you know. In Redondo Beach, you can see the beautiful Weiland mural on the power plant there. And right now, in fact, I was talking earlier about this, but, you know, we're trying to save a mural on the side of the David Broderick building in Detroit, which is a beautiful old building that was in a formerly dilapidated area, and it overlooks Comerica Park where the Detroit Tigers play. But back when the building was abandoned many years ago, Weiland painted this beautiful mural of whales on it. And a few years later, lo and behold, the city builds Comerica Park right next to it. So suddenly the site of this building becomes hot property for advertisers. U.S. Outdoor comes in and they start brokering it left and right. Next thing we know, they're covering it with a super graphic of a Pontiac G6. There's a Mountain Dew ad over it. There's a Jeep. It's like one thing after another. And just recently, Rocket Mortgage came in and they just covered it with another artist who painted, you know, smiley faces on it. And, you know, we just said enough is enough. And, you know, we got the community involved. And, you know, we also invoked, you know, our rights under the Visual Arts Rights Act, which, you know, protects historically significant works of art from any willful infringement. And, you know, we maintain that covering this mural is an infringement on Vera. So, you know, we just filed, thanks to our attorney here, Hess Verdon, in Newport Beach, and some of our friends, we just filed an amicus brief along with the Board of Zoning Appeals in Detroit that was just taken up by the Supreme Court. And we're going to see, you know, we're going to see if Detroit cares enough about its artwork, you know, to protect the rights of artists, but also to protect an art that we may never see the likes of this again. Weiland 65 now, doing this Wailing Wall project that they call it, 100 murals in 17 cities across the world. I find it hard to think that anybody could ever come close to taking on something like this again. Just the magnitude of it took over 30 years to do. Weiland never took a dime for any of it. All his work was donated on these and, you know, supported by us and the foundation. And we'll see what happens in Detroit. I reached out to Dan Gilbert at Rocket Mortgage and the whole team. And we never got so much as an email back, you know. And now, you know, we have some pictures here. But, you know, a lot of people got behind us. Outfront Marketing in Detroit, they donated electronic billboards all across Michigan and Ohio saying, hey, bring back the whales. It matters to the community. And you may think it doesn't, or not you, but, you know, people may think that it's just a picture of a whale on a wall, but it's much more than that. And as we look around our country now and look at our values, this is one of the positive things, I think, that comes out of this, is that people do care about the natural world, you know, and they do care about the arts. You know, we're just glad to play a part in, you know, keeping this alive.
How can people get involved with the foundation?
Oh, that's easy. They can go to wildlandfoundation.org. They can become a member, and, you know, they can also volunteer. We're doing a tour of 30 schools with our Clean Water Center over the next couple of months. In the Inland Empire, we always need docents. We do after school virtual art classes. We always need teachers. I love the work we do, if I can say so. I admire the heck out of Weiland and everything that he's done. And, you know, it's been an incredible adventure. Personally speaking, I've done and seen things that I never even dreamed possible. You know, I think when you get with someone like Weiland, who's this incredible motor, there's almost nothing that you can't do. And that's what our foundation stands for. So,
thank you, Weiland Foundation President Steve Creech, for being on Impact OC. And I thank everyone for tuning in. I'm OC Talk Radio Public Affairs Director Dawn Camber. Have an impactful day.
You've been listening to Impact OC, the only program showcasing the people and organizations shaping our community. Right here on Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio.